Hello, everyone, and welcome back to ThickCast. I'm your host, Morne Edwards, and today joining me on the podcast, I have a special guest. I have Hayley Chapman. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm feeling excited to be here and talk about what we're going to talk about today with neurodiversity, hypermobility, autoimmune diseases, and all these overlapping and linking conditions that there's still so little research about, but that's why we're going to dive into it today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, do you want to give a little bit of a background of like who you are, for anyone who doesn't know who you are, and why you kind of, well, how you got into kind of sport and fitness? Obviously, you're a personal trainer, and how you've then come to look at what you've been looking into recently.
So I trained as a personal trainer after I finished my degree. My degree is in something completely different. My degree is in fine art, and I love being creative, which we'll go on to later, linking with ADHD and neurodiversity. But I very much didn't want to work in the art world, and I thought, you know what? Exercise has completely changed my life, and I want to use that knowledge to help other people because knowledge is power. And then basically, I've been working as a PT on a gym floor now, including the time when it was online through COVID, coming up 5 years in January. And during that time, I've gone through my own personal journey as well of finding out I had ADHD during lockdown, getting diagnosed, realizing I have the hypermobility as well, and then seeing so many of my clients also be hypermobile, neurodivergent, struggling with autoimmune diseases, POTS, gynecological issues, endometriosis, and other symptoms as well. And I was thinking, this is really bizarre just how many people I meet that have these problems, and there just has to be this connection, really.
And that's what kind of got you into looking at it, into it then.
Yeah, because I just thought, you know what? I've got these problems, and I don't have an autoimmune disease, but I have the hypermobility and have the ADHD and the kind of traits that come with then the hypermobility and having a neurodiverse brain. And I think for me, having the low mood, the anxiety, the executive dysfunction that comes with being neurodivergent, where you're kind of struggling to do everyday tasks, maybe getting up out of bed, getting dressed, washing up, the most simple things that are seen as normal adult things, being tidy. As an intelligent person, I was struggling with these things, and I was thinking, why? I'm doing X, Y, and Z to look after my health. I'm ticking all the tick boxes. I'm going out for walks. I'm looking after myself. And yet I'm still really struggling. And when I started talk therapy a few years ago, I went in saying, I'm on the ADHD waiting list, because as we know, that is a very long list on the NHS in the UK, which is getting even longer.
Depends where you
And
are.
I just, it is so long, that list. And I said to my therapist, I said, look, I'm pretty sure I've got ADHD, which is obviously going to affect me and in turn affect how therapy is going to help me. But I said at the time, I was like, I'm a people pleaser. I'm struggling to stay on top of like everyday task, admin, replying to emails and that sort of thing, which as a business owner is crucial. And obviously having the struggles of not wanting to be unprofessional, but also people not thinking I was rude and ignoring their messages, but I was literally struggling so much with basic things like, replying to people's messages because it felt so overwhelming. But then talking in person with people in the one-to-one sessions, that's when I was thriving. But behind the scenes, I was really struggling with all the admin tasks. And only upon getting the ADHD diagnosis, which I only got last year now, was truly life-changing. And for me, that kind of last tick on the bucket list of understanding myself up until this point. And then I tried the medication, and it has been life-changing for me, because this is where it gets interesting for me. A lot of people who have ADHD are not diagnosed, and they get misdiagnosed with anxiety and depression, because we know people with ADHD, because of their low dopamine brains can experience anxiety and depression symptoms. But what happens is when you get diagnosed with anxiety and depression and the ADHD is missed, you get given SSRIs. So that's the classic antidepressant anxiety drugs. But the thing with SSRIs is they boost your serotonin. And obviously, that's one of the happy hormones. So we're thinking, right, we boost these happy hormones, we'll feel better. But the reason that they don't work or don't work well enough, they might help a bit, but not completely, is because ADHD brains are deficient in dopamine, which is a different happy hormone. And so then what's happening is that people are still deficient in the dopamine. They boost their serotonin, so they're feeling a little bit better, but they're still struggling then with these everyday tasks, still getting low mood and anxiety. And then it's only when, so I was on fluoxetine and I still am, but when I took the fluoxetine, I'm only on a low dose of 20 milligram and it helped a bit, but I was thinking this still isn't right. So when I got the ADHD diagnosis, I took for the first time the lowest dose, 18 milligram of methylphenidate hydrochloride. And this is the drug for boosting dopamine for ADHD people. And it kicks in within 1 hour. So it's not like SSRIs, where they take a few weeks to build up in your system for the serotonin. It kicks in for 1 hour. After 1 hour, it lasts one day. And I tell you, in that 1 hour after it kicked in, I sat there in my car eating my lunch and my mind went completely quiet. I could just think about what I wanted to think about. My stress about the rest of my day and the things I had to do disappeared. And I felt really good. And I was like, oh my gosh, is this what it's like to have a neurotypical brain? Because is it, if it is, then no wonder these people find it easy just to get up and do things, because you're not thinking about a million and one things at once, basically. And so because of that, I've now thought, wow, okay, no wonder so many neurodivergent people are struggling. Because like myself, I've gone through that, and then I've seen the difference of what it feels like having the higher dopamine levels. And basically, dopamine in the prefrontal cortex area of your brain, where dopamine's low for ADHD individuals, it affects the functions. So that's what we're talking about when we say executive function. And that means basically doing these boring everyday jobs, replying to emails, tidying your room, washing up, the things that no one wants to do, but just do. And as soon as you got the right levels of dopamine, it helps. So then it goes from executive dysfunction to executive function. So then suddenly, I'm taking these ADHD meds. I'm sitting down and I'll go, right, I'm going to finish these emails in half an hour. Bam, bam, bam. I'll tidy my room. Bam, bam, bam. Whereas other times I'd literally be before looking at, my classic clothes chair, thinking I need to tidy this. And then half an hour later, I'm reorganizing my bookshelf, thinking, how did I get here, sort of thing.
Yeah, you always, I find I'm like, I always do like three jobs all at the same time. And then the job I actually really needed to do, I get to the end of the day and I'm like, oh shit, I didn't do that. It's because
Because
you
you
end up
kind
doing
of get
everything
distracted.
else. Yeah, but it's also really interesting
100%.
what you're saying about when you go to the doctors and they're just like, oh, anxiety and depression, they just put you on medication for that. Because I went through a very similar thing and they were like, oh, it's anxiety, depression. And I was like, but I don't. And I kind of knew at the time it wasn't. I was like, I don't feel like it is. You go along with it because they're the doctors and you're meant to trust them. And then they put you on these meds. And then you ring them up and you go, I don't feel any different. And they go, oh, we'll just take more. So it's like, oh, okay. And then you
It's
take
very
more, but
true.
you don't feel any different. And then you can't come off it. And then they take you off it. Because I think if they took you off it, then they'd have to go, oh, maybe you need something that's going to cost us more money. Like you need to get, like you said, ADHD diagnosis, which I was told was 5 years. So they just kind of don't really do anything, and that's that. I just come off them myself. Luckily, a friend of mine was like, "This is how you need to come off them," who worked in the medical industry. So she's told me how to come off them and everything. But you do, you're just told like. That's it. They don't look at what actually is going on.
No, and I think it's one of those things that it affects so many people a lot more than I think a lot of studies show. I mean, I was watching the news the other day on TV, And it came on and it said 2% of the population has ADHD. And I thought that can't be right. I mean, we know a lot of people aren't diagnosed right now. So those stats are based on what the diagnosed people. And maybe that study was done a long time ago. But I thought from the amount of people I know from doing my job, and not just my clients, people I talk to in the gym, there is a lot of neurodivergent people, and they aren't diagnosed. And obviously, a lot of them I talk to, and we're all sharing these similar problems with like our mood and being able to do certain tasks. But then, equally, we're also people that are very passionate about certain things, and we're often in the gym trying to get that dopamine to make ourselves feel better. So that's why we're meeting each other in the
I was
gym.
going to say, is that potentially why you go into the gym and then you're like, oh, there's loads of people with ADHD here? Because actually, for us, that's a really good place to go. And like you said, get that dopamine, find your brain's just like quiet for a bit. Whereas maybe other people don't necessarily need the gym for that. They can just go about and do normal life. And that's why then maybe, if you went onto the street, there's actually a lot less people that go to the gym. And maybe that's why, because they don't need it.
I think so. I think there's definitely a link because, you talk to people in the gym and they are, obviously training for multiple reasons and different things. But a lot of people do go for their mental health and to feel better. And I can tell you as well from, going from no medication to medication, before I had the medication, I was like, I have to go to the gym. Because if I don't keep up my, plan every week, it will massively affect my mood and my ability and my motivation. Whereas now I do still go to the gym and get that mood boost, but I don't always have to. Whereas before, I remember having a conversation with someone saying, like, if I don't go to the gym, it will really impact my mental health. And it was like a necessity. And now I can see the difference of then having that dopamine through medication as well. Obviously, I've still got to do all the things to look after myself. It is only one of the things on the list, the medication. But I can tell you the difference that, yeah, if you don't have the medication and you do feel it is a need rather than a want.
No, I completely agree with you. Sometimes it's that, it's like for me, and I think that's why I fell in love with weight training so much, is that when I'm training and I'm lifting, because I'm just focusing on how my body's feeling during each rep and how the muscles contracting and all of that, everything else is quiet because I'm
Definitely.
very much focused into each lift. Whereas anything else I do, there's not as much focus, into such a tiny detail. But also I think art, and like you said, you did fine art. For me, that's something that I can really focus and can calm me as well. And I often talk to my clients about it, and I'm like, if you're on a rest week or you're struggling with stress, like just go and do some art and take your mind off it that way.
I think, yeah, you've hit two really good points there. I mean, I think for ADHD people, obviously now there's so much going around about mindfulness to get a quiet mind. But if you've got ADHD, trying to sit there and not have a thought in your head is near enough impossible. So going to the gym, you just can't do it, can you? It doesn't
That's
exist,
okay.
does
I'm
it?
like, yeah, okay. And then you just sit there, like, oh, what should I have my dinner? What should I do this? You can't
Exactly.
do that.
It's like physically you can't do it. And
No.
I remember when I was having my therapy and she was really trying to encourage me, and this is before I had medication. And I'm a motivated individual in looking after my health, and I was thinking I really can't do this. And sometimes I'd listen to the guided ones because there's someone talking on it, but I couldn't just sit there and try and get the thoughts out of my head because, well, I have ADHD. And going to the gym and lifting weights, and like you said, just focusing on how it feels and what rep you're on and all that, that is a form of meditation, really, of being mindful in the moment that people with ADHD can do.
Yeah,
So
you're
I think
moving as well
that's
at the
our
same
form of
time.
meditation. Say
Yeah,
again.
so you're moving as well at the same time, aren't you?
I think that's a big thing as well, because movement obviously helps us process things as well. So, for instance, if I need to talk about something and it's quite stressful, and that goes on to stimming and that sort of thing, but I'm like walking with someone and talking, or and I this goes with my job as well, or our job with PT, people will talk to us and they'll be moving their body.
Yeah.
And I think it's, and I'm sure you can appreciate as well, when you're a trainer, you're not, as a coach, you're not just helping people exercise, you are listening to their lives. A lot of people don't go to therapy, so you almost are becoming that therapist. You know more about these people than maybe their family and friends do. And I think being able to share and talk about your struggles while also moving your body is just such a beautiful combination that isn't always like spoken about enough in the sense of the benefits that come with coaching, the type of coaching we do.
Yeah, I honestly think that you go into this coaching space. Like, obviously, I was a PT for years before I was coaching online. And it's always been the same. You go in just thinking, oh, I'm going to teach someone how to squat on a deadlift. And like, you don't. Like, yes, you teach squat and deadlift and whatever else. But actually, you're, like you said, you're a therapist as well. When they've got an issue, they're coming to you, like, how can I feel better? You're almost like a doctor as well, because every time someone's ill, they're like, why am I ill? And you become this person that's almost like got to fix everything, which is, it kind of shouldn't be like that. And actually, when you look at it in other countries, like I know in America, the athletes out there, America health system is so different to ours anyway, but everyone goes to therapy as well, and they've got their coach. And they've got a doctor for like each different issue, and they've got a physio, and it's so different. Whereas here, we just don't have that. It's just, and it's not, I think it is becoming more normal to go to therapy, but for a long time, it was very like taboo to go to therapy. I'm like, oh, why would you need that?
Very true. It's very true, especially when you break it down as therapy is literally just, talking out loud to someone impartial that's going to help you, guide you to figuring out things. And I mean, when it comes down to anything in life, everything's about communication. And if you can't communicate how you're feeling and why you're feeling like that, if you can't understand yourself, you can't expect anyone else to understand you. And so it will then go on and affect every relationship in your life, whether that's your romantic, with your partner, your friends, your work colleagues. And it, that does then affect everything. So in my mind, I'm like, well, it seems obvious to try some, because there's lots of different types of therapy as well.
Yeah.
But like you said, it is less taboo, but there's still a tabooness there. And then also, people are much more likely, aren't they, to come sign up for a personal trainer or an online coach than they are to go to a therapist or a nutritionist, for example, or a dietitian. And I think because we seem to often be the first port of call, and people obviously, with the cost of things as well, people will think, well, if I can just have this person,
Yeah,
then
yeah.
I'm not going to have to spend extra money and go elsewhere. And then, yeah, I think you do become that person then that's like, because then people will be, like you said, oh, why am I feeling like this? Or why is this happening? Because obviously it affects their training and then their mood and their eating. And so then we're thinking, oh, wait a second. And then I'm like, okay, because like, for instance, with ADHD, you're lowering dopamine. Where can you get dopamine from? Not just exercise, food. So
Yeah.
people often dopamine it, eat, and they'll be like, or boredom eat, weren't they? Because we're not
Yeah.
stimulated. And then that's affecting their food and they're coming back every week and going, I'm doing this, this, and this, but then I'm struggling and I'm eating. And then you're like, okay, but then it's because you've got ADHD as well. So maybe you've got to go about this a different way with your coaching.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, for myself in the past, I struggled post show with binge eating really bad. I've got clients that have ADHD, they struggle with binge eating really bad. And when you then take that kind of step back and you zoom out and you look at it, you're like, oh, like this is why. Because you don't sit there and stick to your meal plan and just eat chicken and rice and get a dopamine hit out of that. Like, so that's why it's then like, oh, okay, where can I get that dopamine from? And then you find yourself eating like packs of cookies and chocolate bars and whatever, because you can get it from that. And I think as soon as you understand that as well, that helps as well, because it's, again, you can then kind of identify that behavior as not, I want to binge eat because I'm hungry or because of whatever. It's actually, I want to binge eat because I'm low on dopamine and maybe I need to do something else that's going to get that dopamine, however that might be
Exactly.
for that individual.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that comes from that learning of yourself, which if you don't even know you've got ADHD to start and you're low in dopamine, you're not going to get to. And I think going back to, the doctor's not diagnosing, this is where a lot of the problems are, because I've said to clients before, I think you might be neurodivergent. And they've gone away and they've gone, do you know what? You've hit the nail on the head. Like, I've got this, this, and this. This has affected me with this. And a lot of these clients of mine are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s. And you've got to think they've gone their whole life going to the doctors. Some of them might have been on a different medication, different things. And the doctor has never once in their whole lives said to them, oh, do you think maybe you have ADHD? Maybe we should refer you. So, you think all the times you see your doctor without your life, and there's
Yeah.
people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s that I know that are just not even had the suggestion made to them to even think about it and go away and do their own research, let alone go on the waiting list for 5 years.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, as we know, around with the binge eating, and there's a lot of shame. And obviously, if someone's feeling a lot of shame, oh, it's my fault I've done this, I have no control, they're not going to start thinking, oh, it's actually because of how my brain works differently. They're just going to blame themselves. And then it goes on that cycle of restriction and binge again. And without understanding yourself, you're never going to have the power to overcome these things. And I think that's why I'm really happy to do this podcast with you today, because I feel the more people that know about this that can go away and do their own research and find out what's right for them, it's going to have a big impact on people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, like you said, it is very underdiagnosed, especially in women, because they thought, oh, this stuff only affects boys. And it's especially like the kind of age we're at as well. When we were kids, it was like, oh no, she can't have that because that she's a girl. That doesn't start a thing. Well, it is a thing. It's just it presents differently. My cousin's got ADHD and we are miles apart on how we are and how it presents itself in us. But yeah, it's just because we're different genders. That's all it is. It's just
Oh,
it looks
definitely.
different. But yeah, I do think it is really interesting. And I think as well, a lot more people are looking into it now as well and realizing what's going on. And there are always people out there that are like, oh, everyone's got ADHD and blah, blah, blah. And I think there are some people that are kind of a little bit like, not playing on it, but just because they're a bit forgetful, think they've got ADHD or something. But also, I was listening to another podcast and they were saying, okay, well, maybe that some people are, self-diagnosing themselves when there's nothing wrong with them. But then also, there's so many people out there that aren't diagnosed, which if they then acted in a way that they were diagnosed and they then, like you said, looked inwards, looked at their behaviors, were able to overcome things like binge eating because they could look at themselves differently, all of that. We know that people with ADHD are more likely to commit suicide and more likely to self-harm and more likely for all these things. So if we just treated it doesn't matter if you haven't got it. Does that make sense? I don't know if that quite made sense what I was saying. But yeah, just look at it as like, okay, maybe they do. And what's the worst that can happen? Like they don't kill themselves. Oh, that's horrific, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so true. It's almost like sometimes there's so many people that still are undiagnosed, they're not on the waiting list, and let alone all the people on that 5 year waiting list or longer, that they're looking at the wrong problem, thinking, oh, because, okay, maybe some people think they have it and they don't. But that's not the bigger problem we got here. We've got a lot of people that are not diagnosed, that are really struggling every day with their body image, their self-esteem, their relationship with foods, their low mood. Like you said, there's a statistic that shows if you've got ADHD, you're much more likely to commit suicide because of that depression, and also the shame that comes with feeling like you're not good enough because you're struggling to get out of bed and get changed. You're struggling to wash up. Basically, all the things that society expects you to do as an adult, when you struggle with those things, people do say, oh, why haven't you tidied this up, or why haven't you done that? And then suddenly all these bits of shame build up and you feel terrible about yourself. So you can see how people get to that point where they don't want to be here anymore.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is it shame over something that, and like, I struggle with little things, and like you said, you struggle with little things, and it's like I hate washing up. But and that actually it's not a hard task, and that's what gets so frustrating then.
Yeah.
Like if we take the washing up for an example, right? That washing some dishes isn't a difficult task, but
No.
the thought of it in your brain is like, I would rather climb a mountain than do the washing up.
Oh yeah.
Like
That's
that's
literally
genuinely easier for me
me. Yeah.
than to wash up.
Yeah, 100%. So it's very much to do with, we know the washing up is easy, but it's boring. And dopamine deficient brains like ours, we want excitement, we want creativity, we want passion and drive, and so the idea of doing that washing up is so boring. But I have to do these little life hacks. You put some music on while you're doing the washing up, try a bit of dance at the same time, all things to try and boost my dopamine and think, you know what, that, or I put a little timer on to give that sense of urgency, which ADHD brains love. So I'm like, right, if I smash this out in 5 minutes, is the timer. Let's do this before the 5 minute timer finishes. And it's all those things, but I think now I've learned about myself and I'm proud of who I am. I've let go of the shame now. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do these things and I might take a bit longer or I might have to use these hacks, but that's part of me. And I love myself for me. And I wouldn't be this person talking to you right now with my business, helping all these people, if I wasn't me. So I wouldn't change the ADHD. I've just had to, I think, just learning about it, understanding it, and helping manage it means now that I can just reap in the positive sides with the creativity and the entrepreneurialness. Like there was like a study that shows if you've got ADHD, it was like you're 300% more likely to have your own business, some crazy statistic. And I was like, that's so true, because some of the wealthiest, smartest, greatest entrepreneurs, business owners in the world have ADHD.
Yeah, mate, I have about five different businesses right now. I've got them all in my head.
Exactly.
I'm like, we do not have the room for me. So I've got this idea for like this like amazing like festival clothing and stuff. And I'm like,
Oh,
we do
amazing.
not have the room in that this house for me to half start a festival clothing line.
Oh, I love that. That's what I mean. If you didn't have your ADHD, you wouldn't have all these ideas and you wouldn't take the risk as well. Because obviously, having a business is a risk, but we're so passionate about the things we love and believe in that we're like, yeah, take the risk. Whereas neurotypical people might take a while and be like, actually, if I weigh up everything, and then it holds you back. And we know, to get to the place you want to be in life, you have to take risks, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So going on to then these kind of things that ADHD is linked to, which is so interesting because, you go to the doctors and like they don't link anything up with anything. Everything they just treat as like a separate issue.
Yeah.
But what you were saying to me the other day was actually like, no, it's all linked.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, they've done lots of studies and it shows that a large group of people that have hypermobility also are neurodivergent and have ADHD, autism, dyspraxia, dyslexia. And to be neurodivergent and have a neurodiverse brain, you can have one or multiple of those. So that's with the ADHD, autism, dyslexia, dyspraxia. And often people might have multiple. And it's, yeah, basically hypermobility is what people know as double jointed. And you can basically take your joint beyond the range that the average person would. But a lot of people I work with, they'll come to me and we'll go through an assessment. And I'm already looking, thinking, oh, their elbows are going a bit further range than normal. You know, you haven't got the straight arm, the elbow's going the other way, really. And
Yeah.
then, oh, their knees are locking quite far back, or their hips are, you know, going really far out on the hip adductor. And then you're suddenly, and then a lot of these people are also neurodivergent. And I was thinking, this is, you know, really uncanny, this amount of people. And then I've done my own research into it. And yeah, there is a lot of studies, and they're saying it's because when you're ADHD, yes, we know the neurotransmitter dopamine is lower in ADHD brains. But there's also studies to show the actual physiological structure of the ADHD brain, in the amygdala, is different, and that's the same in people with hypermobility. The physical structure is different in the amygdala in the brain, which is why they're kind of linking, saying this is causing the connective tissue to be different and to be looser. And then I was like, well, this makes sense then, because if it's structurally different in, you know, the neurodivergent brain and the hypermobile brain in the same area, it's no wonder that a lot of us then have both.
Yeah. And also hypermobility as well. I think some people don't realize, and I don't think I realized to begin with, it's not like a contortionist.
No.
I think that's what sometimes it's portrayed to be, like wrap your legs around your head and all that stuff. But actually, it's not quite that much. It's just a little bit, you know, your elbows go out a little bit more, your knees go out in a little bit more or whatever. It's not literally bending yourself in half.
Yeah, so with hypermobility, there's different conditions with hypermobility. So there will be some people that are more hypermobile, where it will affect them, where they can, you know, dislocate their joints multiple times a day. They're struggling with everyday things like walking because it's that extreme. And then there'll be other people where, yes, they're a bit hypermobile, their elbow goes a bit further, their knees go a bit further, and they might not have any pain with it. So if you're not getting any pain, you're not going to think, I need to go to the doctor and check this out. But then there's also people where you might not be massively hypermobile, your knee might only go a little bit further, or your shoulder, but you're also experiencing a lot of pain. So I feel, you know, getting into pain as well, there are studies to show neurodivergent people have higher sensitivity to pain too. So if you've got the hypermobility causing you pain and you've got higher sensitivity to pain, you're going to be in a lot of pain, and it's not fun, and you'll be going to physios. And even if the physio can see you're hypermobile, and the only thing you can do to help hypermobility is to strengthen your joints, but if they don't also appreciate your neurodivergence, so you might feel pain more intensely, so you might have to basically build up your strength slower because you're going to feel your muscle DOMS and everything a lot more. And there's not a lot of that known within the physio area when I've worked within. I used to work at a private physio practice, and because obviously a lot of people still don't know about this with the pain sensitivity of neurodivergence and the connection with the hypermobility. And I've been very sensitive to pain, and I had a serious neck injury when I was 21, and I think I had a lot of PTSD from that neck injury, and it got misdiagnosed, and I had a lot of chronic pain. And even when I got better, I still struggled on and off with pain. And now I'm looking back and I can see that's linked with being neurodivergent and my sensitivity to pain and how it affected kind of my immune system with the PTSD as well. And I think if I'd known then what I know now, oh, actually, I have higher sensitivity to this pain, so I'm going to feel it more, it would help me so much more back then with my rehab. And it's not about being all weak and you have to push through. You've got to understand that everyone experiences pain differently. And if you have a neurodivergent brain and you're low on dopamine and you're high on stress as well, you are going to feel that pain more.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess also, if you know you're hypermobile but you don't get any pain currently, could that then change? And then at some point, are you at more risk of injury then?
Definitely, definitely. I think that's why it's so important to be aware of it, because it could be something that affects you later down the line. We know that as you get older, you lose muscle mass and strength. And we know that if you have less muscle mass and strength, you're more prone to injury and pain around your joints. So if you are hypermobile and, let's say, got away with it, didn't experience any injuries or pain or dislocation, later on, it could be something that becomes a problem as you get into, 40s, 50s, 60s. And then, say, as you're getting older, if you lose that strength even more, we know if you're not mobile getting in and out your chair, that's a big problem once you get past, middle age, 50, 60 onwards. And if you don't keep your quad strong to be able to get up and down, that can cause a lot of problems. And then those sort of problems then can go on to, say, you have a fall, you don't recover very well because you're not very strong. Accelerates things like dementia, Alzheimer's, because you're not socializing. So, when we're telling people, yeah, keep strong, we know it's because it can have a lot of implications later down the line, which you might be getting away with at the moment, but might not forever.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really interesting that they're all linked. But then also then there's other links as well with autoimmune conditions and POTS as well. Do you want to go into autoimmune first?
Yeah, so with the autoimmune, there's, again, there's not loads of research on this, but they've made some connections. One with the dopamine, because if you've got lower dopamine in your brain, the immune system and the nervous system, they kind of talk to each other, and they use dopamine as one of the neurotransmitters to talk to each other. So there's going to be miscommunication going on there if you haven't got that dopamine in your brain for them to connect and work together. And with autoimmune disorders, we know it's the body is attacking itself, and it is from that miscommunication. So that's one of the theories, that this lower dopamine is causing this miscommunication. And then it also goes on to say, basically, this bit's really interesting. So we've been talking about hypermobility and it being obviously around our physical joints, but we know connective tissue isn't just around our knee joints, our hip joints, our shoulder joints. Connective tissue is also inside the body, around our organs and everything, right? So we can see on the outside of our body, oh yeah, you've got an elbow that goes a bit further, your knee goes a bit further. You can't see by looking at someone what's going on inside, but you got to think all that lacks connective tissue is happening inside their body as well. And that's why they think people then also have the autoimmune, the POTS, the endo, the stomach problems, abdominal issues, because it's all the connective tissues inside are affected.
That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's why they're linking all these things, because, look at how much it affects you and the people with hypermobile joints that you can see, and the pain they get from
Yeah.
that. And then think of all that connective tissue going on inside the body, affecting all the function of everything inside your body. So no wonder we're getting problems with all the functions of everything going on inside.
That's so interesting. That's really because
I know.
I remember when I said to you, I was like, I know what's wrong with me. Like I've had this call. I know I've got this autoimmune condition. And you're like, yeah, it's all linked. I'm
Yeah.
sorry. But it like now you've said it, it does all make so much sense. And I think then when you can like obviously at the moment I'm doing a lot of like looking into everything that's going on in my body and what's happening. And yeah, you're looking at it and you're going, okay, so you know, the issues with your joints is there's going to be a lot of information around the joints or certain autoimmune conditions. I know the one I have causes a lot of inflammation in the body. So that inflammation in the body with the hypermobility is going to then cause even more issues then in the joints and the injuries and stuff. So I guess from a coaching perspective as well, you can then, when you've got a client on board with you and they say, even if they say they've got one of these things, they say, oh, I've got ADHD or I've got mobility or I've got POTS or an autoimmune condition. I guess it's then being on the lookout for the others that it could then link into. And then maybe with training, just being very cautious around training, could there be something that they're more likely to injure with because of it and things like that. So it's so
Oh,
interesting to hear about that.
definitely. It definitely is. I mean, for instance, POTS. So, you're standing up, you're feeling dizzy and a bit out of it. Straight away, I'm thinking barbell squats. They're probably not always going to be the safest with certain people. And, we have to take it individual case separately, because, there'll be some people with ADHD, hypermobility, POTS, and we could get them barbell squatting, and it might just be a case of we got to build it up, just like everyone
Yeah.
else has to build it up. But it might just be the case of we got to build it up that little bit slower, because we got to take all these things into consideration. Because I have a client who has ADHD, hypermobility, and POTS, and they can squat and they built up to do barbell squats, but we had to take it really, really slow. And I think it's just being aware of these things, because if you're not, I mean, I've never been one of those coaches anyway that's just been like shouting at someone like an army sergeant. But if you had that type of coach who didn't understand or appreciate, they wouldn't be the right person to coach you.
I think if they're like that, they're not really the right person to coach anyone, to be honest.
I agree with that, but I've met some people and they're like, no, I prefer it when someone's just shouting at, and I'm like, well, I'm not that type of PT. I'm going to educate you on what you're doing stuff, and I'm going to ask you how you're feeling.
I think, I mean, if you want to go to a class, like when I used to do classes, I would a
Yeah.
little bit more like shout at them, like get them going. Because I think it's different then, isn't it? It's a different environment. It's not so
Oh,
much,
yeah.
you
I
know,
get that with the
one-to-one
classes, it is different.
basis.
Definitely.
But yeah, PT and a little bit of encouragement here and there is good, but tell them to stop being a wet wipe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel sometimes it's a little bit like actually there's so many other things that we want to be focusing on before just going balls to the wall with everything. So
Yeah, definitely. And if they are getting really dizzy or they're feeling really fatigued or that sort of thing, instead of doing the squats, we'll strengthen their knees by sitting and doing some leg extension and leg cut machine. And we'll do some seated hip adductor and hip adductor machines. There's lots of ways to strengthen that connective tissue, within the means of how that individual's feeling on that day. Maybe they can do squats one day, the next session later in the week, they're sitting down doing the machines. And that's kind of what you have to do. And we know strength training is beneficial for everyone. And then I always think, well, if you've got hypermobility, it's that next level. I mean, everyone has to do strength training anyway, or should be doing it because of all the benefits and the health and longevity. But if you've got hypermobile joints, go and join the gym, go speak to someone. Even if, like I said, you don't have to learn how to do a barbell squat, go and sit on the machines, and you can strengthen your joints that way.
yeah, and I think as well, I think when you're, for me personally, anyway, I know that I've had to really look at each exercise I do and what actually works for me, because so many, like a hack squat, for example, it's a great exercise for some people, but for me, it doesn't work. Like, A, I don't feel
Yeah.
it in the right place. B, it fucking aggravates my knees. It
Yeah,
aggravates
same with
my hips.
my knees on the hack.
It's horrible. It's
Yeah.
horrible, but I think it's so easy, especially in this age of like social media as well, where you just flick through and someone's on TikTok or Instagram and like, this is the best exercise to build your legs, and then they're doing like a hack squat and a hip thrust and whatever. Mate, I do them, I'm fucked. Like, I cannot hack squat, I cannot hip thrust. Like,
Yeah.
my body is not thanking me for that. And I think actually, like, it's very much being aware of your body, and also like you were saying before, like the days. I know I can go into the gym some days and I'm like, I can go on the leg press. And I only like to use the hoist one now because it moves with my body and it feels lovely and it's not so painful. Or I can pendulum squat today. But then other days I go in and I'm like, there's no way my body's going to let me do that. And then it's like, okay, what can I do? And it's working around that. And I think, you know, for me now, like my coach does some of my training, but he kind of just leads me to it, because he's like, you know your body so well. When you go into it, if you're having a good day, what you can do. If you're not having such a good day, what you can do, what you're connecting with. And I think it's really important that if you are one of those people that you look at what is working for your body, talk to your coach, have that communication with your coach, and say to them, like, look, I'm not feeling this exercise right. I think it's a little bit painful. And they should be able to go, okay, cool. Like, let's try this, let's try that. And maybe your exercise selection is quite small, what you can actually work with, but that doesn't actually matter.
No, it
I
doesn't.
think that's another massive misconception that we should all be doing every single exercise in the gym if we want to build your legs or whatever. And that's not really the case.
No,
What
it's
works?
having that consistency and progressive overload.
Yeah.
And consistency is generally the hardest part because people will often start mixing up their plan and changing or going for a period of intensity and then, oh, I haven't been to the gym for a month. And, you know, we've lost the basics of consistency and progressive overload. Even if that progressive overload is some weeks we can't upload and we go up a little bit the next week because we've listened to our body, or some weeks we've taken that deload week to give it extra recovery. The consistency is the overall when we zoom out over the months, over the years.
Yeah. And do you find as well for yourself you have to deload more than some of your other clients?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely notice working with so many. So I work with people from a teenager. I've got clients in their 70s, men and women, broad range. And, you know, I make it very individualized for every person. And I will change things or mix them up if they've got certain joints or areas we need to work on more. But I mean, the thing I kind of do with my training that I find works well for me with my hypermobility, and I do help a lot with my clients, is I do a lot of single leg unilateral stuff. I really focus on stuff that challenges the small stabilizer muscles and works through different ranges from the joints. I give to everyone single leg glute bridges. I start with glute bridges, the two leg, because single leg might be too much for some people to begin with. And we've also got to make sure when we're doing things like our glute bridges and our hip thrusts and our ab exercises and our squats, that our pelvis is in the right position. And I
Massive.
think this is something that people are not talking about enough, but also specifically for people that are neurodivergent and hypermobile, your pelvis is probably more curved, like you're pushing forward more. And that's something you see a lot with neurodivergent and hypermobile people. And, so they've basically got to strengthen their ab muscles even more to be able to hold that position then throughout a movement like a glute bridge or a hip thrust. And that's why they often go, oh, I felt my back with the hip thrust, or I felt my back with the squat. So then you look and their pelvis is shifting during the movement. So you do see that quite a lot. And obviously shoulders and knees, we've touched on, like shoulders. You know, if you're someone that shoulders not as stable because of the hypermobility, you've got to work so much more on strengthening and stabilizing that shoulder before you can do movements like overhead press or bench press, because those are the ones that are going to set off that shoulder pain if it's not strong and stable enough to keep it set back. And then with the knees as well, that's a common one, especially with hypermobility. And, you know, if you're getting that knee pain, sometimes certain movements, like we said with the hack squat, where it's driving the knees forward and there's a lot of load going straight onto the knees. Like sometimes for me personally, I'd rather lower the weight, do a single leg variation of something. Like I'd rather do, like for me, a single leg squat to a box or a single leg press or something. And then that's kind of, or a split squat. And for me, those then help stabilize more with the work, the stabilizer muscles, but also more comfortable because being single or unilateral, there's technically less load like needed with adding extra weight. And I find if I'm loading up super heavy, sometimes that can, for me personally, trigger that knee pain in a bilateral 2 foot movement.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. But no, I completely get you there. And it isn't like what you were saying about the pelvis and the ab stuff. I just want to go back to that a little bit, because I do feel like you see a lot of people Like I said, and it is a lot of it is social media, and they're squatting really deep. But you can see, and when you really know, you can see that kind of like that butt wink that the
Yeah.
cover was going under and things. And then people think that that's what they should be doing because they need to be getting to the floor, and that's not the case in a squat. You don't need to get to the floor. And the same with ab exercises. You know, people were throwing all these 500 sit-ups, you know, and they're just throwing their body weight around doing it. But the pain that that can cause to your lower back
Yeah.
is insane. Like, I used to work with someone. He worked with a lot of he did all like GP referral and stroke and all of this stuff. And he said to me, he was like, I'd never program someone's sit-ups because the pain, the amount of force it puts through your lower back is ridiculous. You know, you're better off doing things like planks and stuff instead. But I think people a lot of the time just think that like kind of quick fix, if you want to get abs, just do loads of sit-ups. And like, again, not the case. You want to be thinking of why we're doing an exercise and how that's strengthened and how that's working, I guess.
Yeah, it's wild with the sit-ups because I guess with them, even now, I mean, my algorithm obviously shows what I'm interested in, but I get clients and people telling me all the time, they still get TikToks pop up, do these ab exercises, you will get abs. We know everyone's got abs, but you can't see them if you've got a layer of fat on them. And obviously, you can build the abs and you can define them, and you could have a really strong core, but you still don't have visible abs because there's a layer of fat. And women are meant to have more fat on their bodies to be healthy, to help with their hormones. And then that also then goes to link in with the dopamine hormone. So if you're someone that's got low body fat, your hormones aren't going to work properly, which isn't going to help your dopamine and your ADHD as well. So it all kind of links back every single time. Every single time. And so, and then with protein as well, we tell people, we know you got to eat protein to keep yourself strong. If you don't eat enough protein, it affects the production of dopamine because you need protein. There's something in protein that helps the production of dopamine. If you don't have it, you're not going to be producing dopamine.
Really interesting. I didn't know that
I
either.
know. Yeah. And that's why they also, I mean, we all tell people, yeah, have protein for breakfast because it's important. But you got ADHD. If you're not having protein for breakfast, that day you're already not producing dopamine properly in the morning. So even if you have medication like me, your medication won't work as well unless I'm eating that protein to help with the dopamine medication. So I always tell everyone, eat your protein for breakfast. And I'm doing it, and I'm not just thinking of, my strength gains, which are important. I'm thinking, if I don't have my protein for breakfast, my brain won't work properly for when I go to work or hang out with my friends and that sort of thing.
That is really interesting that as well. So many like gold nuggets of like great information you shared with us today. Is there anything else you kind of wanted to talk about or share?
Oh no, I think we've covered a lot, really. I think we've covered the
I think
majority of it.
it's interesting, and I really hope that you know people listening to this that are you know have ADHD, maybe it's diagnosed, maybe it's undiagnosed, autism, whatever other kind of neurodivergence they might have, or struggling with any of these things. It's really interesting how it is linked. And so maybe if you've got like you know two or three of these things, and then you because you experience like I've got a client and she you know she's been experiencing issues for ages and I kind of said to her before that like, I you know I think this is celiac, I think it's an autoimmune thing, let's just keep pushing with the doctor. And then when you told me that I was like that makes me even more sure that that is the case, because again she's someone with ADHD, she's someone with hypermobile joints. When you start linking them together like you said, then it would make sense, wouldn't it? But when doctor with that, they're like, oh no, I just think that you may be just I don't know.
Anxiety.
Maybe you just
That's
got
what you get them
anxiety of
answering.
eating bread. You don't see that, you're very anxious about it.
Yeah, it does often get diagnosed as anxiety and things. And yeah, I guess the only one thing we didn't talk about was genetics as well. And there's a lot that says, if you're hypermobile, you probably got a hypermobile parent. If you've got ADHD, you've probably got an ADHD parent or a neurodivergent parent. And we do see it passed down in genes. Same with autoimmune diseases. there's a lot of studies, especially with maternal parent being passed down and that sort of thing. So, I mean, since I was diagnosed, I told dad just to do, one of those checkbot tests online, and he passed ADHD and autism with flying colours. And I mean, I only got a look at him, and I think, yeah, I've got it from you.
Thanks, Dad, for that one.
Yeah, literally. So, yeah, a lot of your parents will probably not be diagnosed either, so they probably don't know. But even, I mean, my dad won't mind me saying this, even since telling my dad, it's helped him loads, because he said he sometimes, felt shame for some of his behaviors, and being messy and that sort of thing, and understanding himself, it's helped him let go of that and know himself better. And I think that's massive, someone carrying that feeling their whole life to go, actually, I understand myself now. I can let go of that shame. I understand why I'm like this.
Yeah. My
Yeah.
dad's told me that it's all come from my mum's side and it's nothing to do with him. So I'm like, thanks. So supportive. He's like,
He's
yeah,
like, it's not
whoever's
me.
informing, it's from your mother's side, all of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Love
very helpful. But
it.
yeah, like you said, and also with autoimmune, the other thing
Yeah.
is sometimes you can have it, but it doesn't show up yet. So
Yeah.
obviously, this is what I discovered is that like I've got this autoimmune disease. And I'd have had it my whole life.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can have it, but it's not turned on. And the
Yeah.
more I've kind of looked into Hashimoto's and stuff now, I know that I had it my whole life. The gene was
Yeah.
there, but it wasn't turned on. And then
Yeah.
I had food poisoning, like Salmonella food poisoning, really, really violently ill. And that's what turned on the gene for this autoimmune condition. So I think that's the other thing is sometimes, so it might be, when I spoke to doctor and he said to me, it is genetic. So it could be
Yeah.
that my mum or dad has it, but they don't even know that they've got it because it's not switched on in them, but it is in
Yeah.
me because of that virus. So again, that's, I guess that's something to be aware of is, just because it's not switched on now, it doesn't mean that you might get food poisoning and it turns on.
Exactly.
You just don't know.
You
So
don't know. And then having that knowledge of the potential and setting yourself up with everything you can do possibly to help yourself. So if that situation does happen and it does turn on, you are well equipped as best you can to deal with it.
because that's the thing, it took me like over 2 years to get diagnosed
Yeah, these
like that.
diagnosis is not quick. And yeah, there's especially when, going back as well with the ADHD, and it will link in anything really, unfortunately
Yeah,
now. This takes a
I
long
went
time.
private, but I've gone private
Yeah.
because
Yeah, if you can go private is the answer to get, the quicker help, definitely.
but I went to the doctors with my bloods and they were like, no, you don't have that. I went privately and he's like, you definitely have that.
Yeah, and
This doesn't happen.
it's sad to say, but I'm not shocked, because I've had situations, where, looking back now, it was obvious. But when you don't know that, you just trust the health professional and you
Yeah.
think, oh, okay. And then you go to a different one like you've had, and they've gone, well, it's obvious that you've got this. And you
Yeah.
yeah and these are very sadly commonplace stories that we hear all the time from
Yeah.
people.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think that's the way the country's going. I think more and more of us are going to have to go private
Yeah.
to get the kind of the help that we like. It's not even the help that you want, it's the help that you need
Yeah,
to
it's definitely a need.
live.
It's definitely a need, because it affects your ability to function every day. Yeah.
Massive. Okay, so side note before we end it, Hayley, I'm going to blame it all on Hayley. Forgot this, so she's going to give us this fact.
Yeah, to be honest, you can blame it on me. I've accepted my ADHD now, so it's just popped in, just popped back into my
Accept
brain.
no shame for this.
Yeah, I will accept that. Yeah, basically, there's a study that shows around 80% of autoimmune diseases affect women. And there's a theory that because women, how we're brought up within society, are more likely to be people pleasers and not express how we really feel, we internalize all these negative thoughts and emotions, and then it has such a negative impact on our body. We develop these autoimmune conditions, or maybe it is then, like we said earlier, triggering the gene that affects it. because obviously we know how we're thinking. If we're feeling mentally bad, we feel physically bad, and the brain and the body are connected.
Yeah,
So it is
wow.
some food for thought to definitely, if you are a people pleaser, go to therapy and stop being a people pleaser, because it will help you mentally and physically, potentially.
Yeah, and I guess with the ADHD, that also feeds into people pleasing as well.
Yeah, so the ADHD part of it is rejection sensitivity. And that's basically when someone gives you any sort of critique, or what you perceive as criticism, it might not necessarily be, you can take it to heart and it can really affect you. And therefore, you're more likely to people please, because you so don't want that feeling of rejection sensitivity that you don't want to say anything to them that might make them say something critical to you. And then with the ADHD emotions as well, we are a lot more amplified with it. So I always say, on a scale, say something sad happens, or someone says something that's upsetting and you feel sad for them, a non-ADHD person might feel like a 6 out of 10 on the scale of sadness, 10 being very sad. And an ADHD person will be at a 10. And then to get back from that emotion, to get back to like neutral, it's going to take you a lot longer. And before I had the ADHD medication, I can hear sad things now and be sad and be present with it, but then I can move on. Whereas before the medication, I could be thinking about something weeks later that really upset me. And logically, I'd be like, no, you need to move on. But emotionally, I couldn't. And that's with the emotional dysregulation, again, affected by low dopamine in the brain.
Super interesting. And yeah, what we were just saying as well is so if you are struggling with things as well, and you're being told, just train harder. You're struggling to do the squat on the hack squat. You're struggling to what you said, do your walking lunges, was it?
Yeah.
Be like, just try harder. If you're hypermobile and your ADHD or what, and you're feeling pain, is not the answer, because the answer is actually, let's look and try a different exercise. But that people pleasing side of us often goes, oh yeah, it must be me. I'm in the wrong, and I must try harder. And
Oh, definitely.
that's not the case at all.
Not the case. And it is definitely a thing, though, of especially if your coach is saying it, and you want to do well for your coach, you don't want to let your coach down, just try harder. Oh, everyone else is managing to do it. I mean, I was telling Molly before that even little fit, I have hypermobile toes. I mean, a lot of people probably have hypermobile toes and have no idea. I just thought I just had a cool party trick. And then now I'm older, I'm like, oh, it's hypermobile toes. And so, for instance, I can do lunges and split squats in my trainers, well, specific training trainers. But if I take my trainers off and train in socks, which a lot of people do for obviously strength training to feel more stable, I can't do it, because as soon as I start to bend my toes too much because they're hypermobile, I'm getting pain. And that's even just body weight. And and that's not because I'm weak or because I'm not trying hard enough. It's because my toes don't like it. So I'm going to put my trainers back on or do something different.
Yeah, it's literally that simple. It's
Yep.
that simple. So yeah,
Yep.
there we go, everyone. That's our last golden nugget for you. But yeah, thank you so much, Holly, for coming on the podcast. If people
Thank
want
you.
to find you, get in touch with you. If they're down North Devon area and they want some personal training, where can they find you?
So I'm based at two independent gyms in North Devon. I'm based at Baron Barbell in Barnstable and the Physique Factory in Mullicott in Ilfracombe. And then on Instagram, TikTok, my handles are at hayleychapman.pt. So they can always drop me a message there as well.
Lovely. Thanks so much. And
Thank
thank
you.
you both for listening. If you've enjoyed it, please drop us a follow, subscribe, like, and yeah, share it on your stories. Tag us both in it. Thank you very much. Bye.